Nice to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hello, Larry Mueller here. Glad you're along today as we begin by taking a look at wildlife art with David Wagner of Milwaukee. He's a national authority on wildlife art, museum director, curator, author of American Wildlife Art. It's a 424-page volume. It contains 310 beautiful color illustrations. It's published by Marquand Books of Seattle, Washington. David is also the former director of Wausau's Lee Yawkey Woodson Art Museum, and he serves as curator and tour director for the prestigious Society of Animal Artists. It's a worldwide organization. It's headquartered in New York City, and it will be premiering its annual exhibition at the Neville Public Museum this Labor Day. David Wagner, welcome.
Thank you, Larry. It's great to be here.
Exhibit promises to be really something.
Oh, it's wonderful. Each year, the work gets more exciting and better, and artists will be showing up in numbers in Green Bay today and tomorrow, and meeting the public on Saturday for the first time to premiere the annual exhibition.
And as long as we're on that topic, tell us what we could expect to see.
Well, we'll be able to see animals of the entire animal kingdom, wild animals from Africa, from North America, from the oceans, but also domesticated animals, horses, dogs. We even noticed that there's a painting of goats in the exhibition, which will be interesting. So, and wonderfully painted in all sorts of media and all sorts of styles.
So we can all get there on Saturday, starting on Saturday. And how long will it be running?
It runs through November, into early November, actually.
Well, that's something that we'll probably talk a little bit more about as we go along, but I really want to get into your book a bit and talk about American wildlife art and invite our listeners to join in. If you'd like to ask a question as we visit with Dave Wagner, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. If you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890, and you can email us at talk@wpr.org. David, talk about how you've organized your book. You start sort of with early wildlife art and go through to the present, basically.
It's organized in various sections historically. I begin with early colonial work and then work up to a section in the middle of the 19th century, Romanticism through Impressionism, and then 20th century, right up to the best artists of our present time.
Yeah, and as I mentioned, there are many, many, many beautiful illustrations of the works of these authors. How did you put all this together? It's an amazing feat.
Well, I spent years and years. I wrote my PhD dissertation at the University of Minnesota and was enlisted by Cornell University Press after one of their representatives attended a program that I organized at Chautauqua Institute for Roger Torrey Peterson. And with that springboard, I spent probably 15 years traveling, interviewing artists, gathering materials, working in libraries, doing primary research, and just assembling this volume. And finally, this past Valentine's Day, it was my Valentine's present. We premiered the book and launched it in Charleston, South Carolina this past year.
Yeah, I just thought about just the logistics of getting permissions for showing the illustrations and so forth had to have been a little bit mind-boggling at times.
Well, I'm blessed to have a good publisher. They handled those kinds of logistics, and I could never have done it without them.
How is wildlife art different from other kinds of art?
That's a good question. I think it's different in a number of ways, but principally, it requires artists not only to be creative and express themselves, their creative ideas through competent technical abilities and competent and interesting styles. But they also need to know a little bit more than your, average run-of-the-mill artists, because they need to have a scientific perspective or at least an understanding of things like habitat, animal behavior, and all of the ambience that would surround their particular subject matter.
It was interesting, and you go back to, I think it was John White was one of the early guys, that he was a flora and fauna I think, recorded some of the early flora and fauna.
He did mostly wild animals. He came to North America in as early as 1585 and was sent by on expeditions by Sir Walter Raleigh to sort of scope out the New World for possible colonization. And actually, his earliest work also depicted the peoples that inhabited North America, and his works were published in Germany and gave Europeans their first glimpse of the New World, the people and the animals that inhabited the New World.
And as I think about White, there are so many great artists, giants, really, in the world that of art, wildlife art, that come to mind, aside from White. I almost hate to go to Audubon right off the bat, but he was such an interesting guy, too.
Well, Audubon was fascinating. I would have loved to have met John James Audubon. I think if there's anyone I would have loved to have met as a character in the stories that are in my book, he certainly would have been high among them. He was I think of him in one sense as being sort of like P.T. Barnum in his ability to promote and celebrate and just have a bigger-than-life persona. But also he was a gifted and brilliant and prolific writer. He wrote letters and journals and a great artist, but also a great leader and businessman, surrounding himself with others of equal or greater skill to bring his famous publication, Birds of America, finally to publication. Yeah. And he was much beloved and celebrated in his own lifetime.
Yeah, he certainly was. And there are some others I want to talk about as well. But Mike's online from Chippewa Falls, so let's go to Mike. By the way, you can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Or in Madison at 263-1890, and email us at talk@wpr.org. Mike in Chippewa Falls, thanks for calling. Hello.
Good morning, Larry, and to your guest also. I was wondering if your guest could give me a little bit of information and a possible idea of the worth of it. I have a print that I purchased over 30 years ago, done by Les Kuba, and it's depicts a three grouse in a winter setting of poplar. And it is on canvas, and it has his traditional broad strokes. And I know he was big in promoting the early idea of prints.
It may be hard for you to come up with that, but can you talk a little bit about Les Kuba?
I can talk about the market. I know Les Kuba's work. The important thing to understand about the value or valuing art prints, or any art for that matter, is that it is worth generally whatever the market will bear. And in order to actually manifest that value into real dollars, you need to tap into the market and find a buyer, someone who's interested to actually purchase it. You might go back to guidebooks there are official print guidebooks that have been published over the years that publish recent values for which artworks and prints have been sold, and I think that might be your best bet to begin the process. But of course, the second ingredient will be bringing that to a sale, and that's a little more difficult. Art prints aren't traded like commodities on the stock exchange, so that's a challenge.
Yeah. All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. Appreciate your call, Mike. Again, you can join in at 800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. How did you get interested in this field to begin with?
Well, I was raised by a family that I had grandfathers and a father who were outdoor sportsmen, and my earliest interest came from being a hunter and a fisherman. When I went to off to college, I went to UWSP with the Stevens Point with the idea of going into natural resources. But my science grades were not up there, so I transitioned into the arts and eventually came out with a master's degree in arts administration was then hired as director of the Lee Yawkey Woodson Art Museum in Wausau, which I served as director from 1977 to 1987. And during that time, right from the get-go, had the chance to meet and get to know artists like Wisconsin's great wildlife artist Owen Grammi, or Roger Torrey Peterson, or some of the really other greats like Robert Bateman. And my interest and day-to-day relationship with these artists, and my work caused me to want to know more. And just out of my own desire to learn, to want to know more and to use that to do the best job that I could on the job, I enrolled in a PhD program in American Studies, and from that wrote my dissertation on American wildlife art prints.
It's a wonderful story. In your mind, who are the great wildlife artists and why?
Well, I have a list in my mind, Larry, but I also have something better than that. And in fact, this might pertain to the caller's question who called a few minutes ago as well. In the 1980s, I conducted a worldwide survey, and I surveyed living artists worldwide, a long list of artists who regularly were juried into the best wildlife art shows. And one question I asked them was, which artists have been the most influential in your career and the most influential in wildlife art in general? And I had a 77% response rate.
Wow.
So
that's great.
It was unbelievable. And people just responded. And I documented that. And I have a list which is published in my book, and it has been published previously. So I have shaped my own thinking, having feedback from the artists themselves. As an art historian, sure, I could look through time and look through the evolution of style and influence, but I actually have it from the artists themselves in terms of those artists that they thought were most influential. And, of course, Audubon was right up there in the top 10, but at the top three were Louis Agassiz Fuertes, then Carl Rungius, the great German-American artist and someone who introduced Impressionism to the genre. And at the very top was Robert Bateman. The list is longer than that, but to give you an idea, those are some of the very, very top artists that that I agree really have shaped and influenced history.
Well, let's talk, and they're obviously all featured in your book.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk a little bit about them. How about Robert Bateman? He was an interesting guy, too.
He was and remains so. Bob is very active to this very day. In fact, presently he has an exhibition, The Art of Robert Bateman, at the National Museum of Wildlife and Wildlife Art in Jackson Hole, for which I serve as curator. One thing that Bob has brought to the field that no other artist quite has is a sense of bravery. I would describe it as something that's been extremely brave on his part. He has taken his success. He could have just rested on his laurels and enjoyed a nice, cushy, comfortable life and painted more of the same, but no. He has taken his artistry and challenged viewers, challenged the establishment, and portrayed wildlife in predicaments that it finds in this day and age that are unprecedented, predicaments like commercial fishing and netting that generates bycatch or bykill in droves, or commercial logging in his neck of the woods. He lives up on an island just off of Vancouver Island near Victoria, British Columbia, and is well aware of clear-cutting, old-growth forests, and his works overtly portray, you know, dead, clear-cut forests as opposed to the lush, green, old-growth forests that might exist in maybe 5% of the, you know, that might occupy 5% of the land still. So his works are quite challenging, and most artists wouldn't take their work that far. It doesn't certainly comply with what you might think the market might demand, but he's about something much bigger than that, and I think he's a very, very brave artist.
We're talking today with David Wagner of Milwaukee, National Authority on Wildlife Art, and his book is titled American Wildlife Art. If you'd like to join in, the number to call 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. You may have a question about an artist you're interested in, maybe the art itself or maybe about the individual. Or some other questions relating to wildlife art. We'd love to hear from you at 800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. And you can email us at talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. talking with David Wagner about art, wildlife art in particular, American wildlife art. That's the title of his book. It's published by Marquand Books of Seattle, Washington. Really pleased to have him with us. And you can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. Give us a call. And let's take another caller here. Gene, I believe, in Cataract is up next. Gene, hello. Thank you for calling.
Just a second.
Gene, are you there?
Yes, Larry. I had to turn my radio down.
Oh, okay. What's on your mind?
Well, I would like to know the easiest way to get a hold of David's book and if there's a way to get a signed copy.
Ah, well.
I live on an 80-acre farm, and we have a lot of wildlife on our land, including badgers and bear and wolves and everything else. So I'm actually quite interested in his book.
Wow. Well, that's a great question, isn't it, David?
That's the kind of question I like to have, Larry. Well, you can call Marquand Books, and the number is 206-287-0255. The fellow there handling my book, his name is Romeo Martinez, and he happens to have signed copies. Or you can visit the website at American-Wildlife-Art.com and email Romeo and request a signed copy as well.
But also, you will be giving it's possible that Gene could come to one of your presentations.
Absolutely. I have a variety of presentations coming up, and not only do I offer a one-hour walk-through sort of talk with a slideshow from images from my book, but in addition, I usually sign books after the talk, and my next one's coming up this Saturday in Green Bay. I'll be speaking also at a variety of other locations in Wisconsin as well as throughout the United States.
And can I ask you, will you be anywhere near La Crosse? I work at the university.
Well, I'll be at the Arboretum in Madison. That's my nearest location at this point.
Probably. And you'll be in Stevens Point area too, won't you? Or am I mistaken?
I think not.
Okay. I'm looking here. The University of Wisconsin Arboretum on the 20th of November. Mm-hmm. And then you'll be at the Urban Ecology Center in Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. And that's on the 7th of December.
Exactly.
But for now, on August 30th, you'll be at the Neville.
As well as on September 4th. And the reason I'll be at the Neville, in addition to my lecture, will be to celebrate the opening of the art and the animal exhibition.
Yeah. Gene, I hope this helps.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. So the easiest for you, Gene, may be to give a call to that number or go on. What's the website again?
American-Wildlife-Art.com.
American-Wildlife-Art.com. Mm-hmm.
There, it's sold on Amazon as well, but with the publisher, Marquand Books in Seattle, they actually have autographed copies there.
Okay. All right. Thanks again, Gene. Don in Ashland, it's your turn. Hi, Don.
Good morning.
Morning.
We are listening to your program, as we do probably every day, and your topic today is very interesting, and with some interest in art and so forth, we feel that Greg Alexander here in Ashland is probably one of the premier wildlife artists at the present time, and we haven't heard his name mentioned.
What's his name again? I'm sorry.
Greg Alexander. He's been accepted throughout the United States, and he's done a number of wildlife stamps, revenue stamps, and so forth and so on. I hope that he is in your book.
The book is primarily historical in nature, going from about 1585 through the centuries. So I don't treat many living artists. There's just a very small handful that I do, Bob Bateman among them.
Bob would be one, yeah.
But my publisher has indicated that if the book continues to be successful in terms of sales, they may be considering a sequel, and in the sequel, it would treat living artists, contemporary artists. And I would like to learn more about this artist, so I will check out his work. Thank you very much.
He's roughly 40 years of age, but he's been so well accepted throughout the United States and certainly in this area, we think that his quality of work is top-notch, and that if you're going to do another book, you certainly should have him in there.
And give us his name once more.
Greg Alexander, and he's in Ashland, Wisconsin.
Thank you, Greg Alexander. And we want to make sure David's writing it down.
I have it.
All right. Thanks, Don. Josh in Gilberta, Illinois. It's your turn now. Hi, Josh.
How you doing?
Good.
Good. I actually have a studio in my house, and it features wildlife art. I'm an instructor. Me and my father teach at the studio, and we teach a lot of wood sculpting classes to all different ages, but we focus on kids. And I just wanted to get a little advice from you, if I could. We're trying to get our name out and expose people to this type of art, which isn't quite mainstream. So I just wanted to get some feedback, if I could, from you guys on how to do that.
On how to do what exactly?
On how to sort of promote your work?
Yeah, to promote the work. And we sell wood sculpture, but we're also teaching wildlife art, whether it's painting, drawing, or wood sculpture, to all different ages. But we're focusing on kids because wood carving isn't something they necessarily learn in school.
Well, I'm not sure if this answers your question, but for one thing, I would suggest that you submit your work into the various museum exhibitions that exist around the country. And then there are all sorts of wildlife expositions and commercial venues that offer opportunities for artists. One of the big ones is in Charleston, South Carolina, the Southeastern Wildlife Expo, or even another might be the World Championship Waterfowl Carving Competition on the Chesapeake in Ocean City, which is overseen by the Ward Brothers Waterfowl Carving Museum in Salisbury, Maryland. It attracts some of the greatest carvers.
Actually featured there. He's a world champion carver.
Mm-hmm. Who is this? I'm sorry?
Bob Googie?
Yeah, Bob. Yeah, I have at least three of his pieces. So.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Small world.
Yeah, and, you know, for children, you might even just start locally with your local schools and contact the art teachers, or, you know, make some contacts with the local schools and get started that way if you want to work with children. And that might be a way to sort of to get started. If you want to actually work with kids, that might be a way to get started. I don't know what you think, David.
Mm-hmm. Or offer workshops, for example, or demonstrations.
Or demonstrations, mm-hmm. Yeah. It'd be wonderful. Well, good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Josh. Appreciate it. Larry and Stevens Point, it's your turn. Hi, Larry.
Hi. I just had a little comment about sort of an offshoot on wildlife art. There are guides out for various things, like Pearson's Guide on flowers and things like that. And one of the guides is Pearson's Guide on Freshwater Fishes, which was done in 1991. And it has illustrations of lots of different kinds of freshwater fish. And so they're going to be doing a new edition coming out in a couple of years. And my son has done 150 illustrations of fish for that coming guide. So it's just another Wisconsin boy doing something he really likes to do.
Well, I'd certainly like to learn about his work. It's totally serendipitous, but
yeah.
Yesterday I was just approached, and in fact will be doing, curating that is, at a major museum in the Rocky Mountain West, a new exhibition entitled Art of the Dive, Portraits of the Deep. And it will feature fish and all things aquatic. It will be a major museum show. And if you would like to email some images and a little bit of information, I'd love to learn about his work.
Sure. I'd be happy to do that. And just one question I had for him when he got this this thing. He's doing things like the crappies, the bass, and the walleye and stuff. And the more famous artist, they are using his trout rather than our son's. But they asked him, well, why would these guys use illustrations rather than photographs? And his answer was that, well, photographs will show you a picture of a particular fish which may have a spot or something on it that may not be typical for that species. but an illustrator can look at a whole range of fish and come up with a blend that really represents the fish better than a photograph.
Sure.
And I hadn't thought of that before.
Well, he's actually following in the footsteps of Roger Torrey Peterson, who is the progenitor of the field guide, which came out in 1934, the first field guide. I knew Roger well and had watched him work, and he said the same thing. It was to get the idealized image of a particular bird so people could recognize it right away as opposed to an individual.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. What email address would you send it to?
You can go to my book's website, and all the contact information will be there. Again, it's American-Wildlife-Art.com.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. And let's go to Matt in Hatfield next. Matt, hello to you.
Hello. Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
I was wondering if you might be able to tell me, I have a piece of advertising art by a gentleman by the name of Sweeney. And I think he's a Wisconsin artist, and I was wondering if you knew anything about him.
It doesn't come to mind, so I'm sorry not to be able to help you on that one.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. And Jennifer in Waterloo, Wisconsin. Hi to you.
Hi. I was wondering if your guest could comment about a wildlife artist that I've been interested in for a long time now named Charlie Harper, who I think is originally from Cincinnati and does serigraphs. Wonderful sense of design and color, and I'll take his comment off the air.
All right, sure. Thanks for calling.
Thanks. Well, Charlie Harper was an artist who emerged in the wildlife art market through the company Ray Harm Wildlife Art Inc. It was one of the granddaddy company that first produced so-called limited edition signed and numbered prints. When that company became so successful that it needed to enlarge itself, it morphed itself into a new company entitled Framehouse Gallery. And Charlie Harper, along with some other really top-name artists, Don Richard, Richard Eckleberry, Guy Koliak, among them, Charlie Harper was among that particular group. Though he was among that group, his art differed from any other artist that I know of then till now. As you correctly observe, he was an artist with a really wonderful sense of playful, whimsical design, almost like Miro, or an artist that just enjoyed the abstract qualities of the art, the angles, the circles, the shapes and the colors. And his work is really witty and charming and fun. And I think someone who is highly respected as an artist who marched by his own beat. I really enjoy his work.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call as well. And we finally have some open lines again, so you can get on pretty quickly with your question about an artist or art, or at least as it relates to wildlife art, as we visit with David Wagner of Milwaukee National Authority on Wildlife Art, and he's written and produced the book American Wildlife Art. It's a 424-page volume. It contains 310 beautiful color illustrations, and it's published by Marquand Books of Seattle, Washington. So give us a call at 800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. You know, I think it was probably Arthur Tate. Well, James Audubon really changed how artists, I think, looked at wildlife art quite a bit. But Arthur Tate, whose name may not be as readily, come to mind for many people, really got things going with Currier and Ives and his collaboration there.
He did. Tate found himself in a situation in England where he just couldn't break into the market. And it's interesting how many of the artists came from Europe to the United States to find opportunity and then achieve great things and find the opportunities they were looking for. Tate was among them. He came here with his cousin initially to try his luck at creating a kind of panoramic painting in New York City. That didn't pan out, but as he was going across the Hudson to New Jersey, he would often see hunters. And he himself became a hunter and observed another artist who was doing art of the hunt, primarily waterfowl hunting there, and established himself in that market as Currier and Ives chief sporting artist. He painted over later about 200 white-tailed deer in the Adirondacks. Yeah. These were really aimed at the emerging market of sportsmen. And it was during the time of the Industrial Revolution in the middle of the 19th century when recreational and back-to-nature movements were occurring. So he was the right man at the right place. And the new technology of lithography and then chromolithography enabled Currier and Ives to produce his work in mass and in huge press runs, like 200. Well, they had runs that might number as high as 200,000.
So Currier and Ives made a lot of money on it, and Tate made his reputation and a bit of money himself.
I hope so, yes.
Okay. Ruth and Ladysmith, it's your turn. Hi, Ruth.
Hi. This is a little bit off the beam, but I wondered if you could mention the names of any wildlife artists who specialize in trompe l'oeil art, if you know what that is, where it looks like it's popping out at you. I have an idea for some murals, and I would really like to be able to look up some things.
Well, in history, Michael Harnett comes immediately to mind. He did the famous hanging game painting, which is an icon or signature piece. Currently, it's in the collection of the San Francisco Museums of Fine Art. But in the state of Wisconsin, Mike Redette is an artist who comes to mind. He's in southwestern Wisconsin. I bet if you check the internet for Mike Redette, you'd find his name pop up quickly on Google or some other search engine. Michael Redette, R-I-D-D-E-T. T, or maybe a double T, I don't recall.
Okay.
If you followed through with him, he could probably lead you to all sorts of others, but he would be a good one to start with. Yeah. Because he's right here in Wisconsin.
Sure.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Ruth. Ken in Minocqua, it's your turn now. Hi, Ken.
Good morning, guys. How's everything going?
Great. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. And artist, I have a question about. I have a print that I acquired around 1960. Appears to be dated from the 20s in terms of frame style and so on. The artist is an individual, capital A, Pope, P-O-P-E, and I believe it might be a senior. It kind of runs off behind the frame, and I haven't taken the picture apart yet. Any idea?
Well, it doesn't come to mind, but what I would do is you could unframe it. What you might do is take a photograph of it and look at contact some auction houses. There may be additional information which would give you more to go on. There may be a publisher of the print further information, and you could take that to, say, auction houses or a museum or go online and conduct a little bit more research based on the additional information you find.
Yeah, and you may find some of that. He may find some of that under the frame. And
exactly.
Yeah. Good luck. Give it a shot, Ken. Thank you for calling. Terry in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Terry.
Hi. I was wondering if your guest had ever heard of a wood carver by the name of J.T. Morton.
Norton?
I met him in Grapevine, Texas. He's a retired engineer from the FAA and took up wood carving, and he does the most fascinating things with driftwood. He travels a six-state area and visits lakes to pick up driftwood, mesquite, and cedar stumps.
What
he does is he makes birds out of the driftwood using part of the natural driftwood as a section of the body. I mean, for example, he uses the whole back end of a stump of a cedar tree for the backside of a pelican. He does ducks, one-piece ducks, where he's using mesquite, where he leaves some of the natural driftwood in the carving itself, and then he uses a heavier wire, probably 3/16 to a quarter inch round wire for, that he welds and uses for the birds' legs, including ducks.
Hmm. Any ideas on that one?
Well, David? I'm not familiar with his work per se, but I know there are many artists who use found objects to create their work, and this artist sounds particularly creative at doing so. I'd love to see it, and in fact, we'll check it out. Sounds very interesting.
So it's J.P. Norton. Okay.
Wildlife-art.com.
And yes, it's American-wildlife-art.com.
Yeah, what I'll do is I'll take some pictures. I've got probably 24 pieces of his, some at home and some in the office. And I'll take some pictures of these with his name and address and send them to you.
It would be nice to know about. I'm involved with a variety of exhibitions that I get to serve as curator for, and it's always good to learn about artists all around the country, and this one being so interesting would be one of them.
All right. Thank you very much for calling, Terry. Marcia in DeForest, your turn. Hi, Marcia.
Hi, I'm just delighted to be able to talk with you. For years now, I've been following an artist by the name of Ray Troll. Funny name, but great art. He has a studio in Ketchikan, Alaska, and he started out by being an illustrator for a paleontologist, and an ethical paleontologist. He got fascinated with sea life, the prehistoric sea life, but he continues on from there to produce some of the most fabulous artwork done with pastel on dark paper or colored pencil on a darkened background. And he has done a mural for the Smithsonian, as well as had extensive exhibitions, one of the a very well-beloved exhibition at the Burke Museum in Seattle. And I know he's done many others, but if you look up the art of Ray Troll, he has written a number of books. One of them is called, with his artwork in it, called The Rapture of the Deep. And he does things like show, if you looked under the water in Puget Sound, what life is like down there, all the creatures that you would find, for example.
Well, I want to break in because we're just about out of time. Do you know about Ray Troll?
I don't, Larry, but it's amazing the things you learn on your show. And it sounds interesting. I'd like to learn more, particularly since I'll be working on a project on this theme coming up.
And Marcia, David wrote down the name, so he'll be looking into it. I thank you very much for calling. And David, thank you so much for being with us. You have a wonderful book, American Wildlife Art. It's published by Marquand Books of Seattle, Washington. So we've got that, and I know you want to mention the exhibition, too, again.
I do. Art and the Animal, which premieres with its annual exhibition at the Neville Public Museum. And if anyone is looking for something interesting and fun to do this weekend, come on by Saturday afternoon. Many of the artists will be in the gallery. In fact, some of them will be doing painting and sculpting, and I will be giving my talk as well. And finally, Larry, I want to say it's a real honor and pleasure to be on your show. I've listened your show for years, and I've enjoyed your coverage of Wisconsin authors and your interest in animals, too. So thanks very much for having me.
Well, thank you so much, and I'm enjoying your book a lot, and I hope we can come back and do this again.
That would be great.
Love to have you back. David Wagner of Milwaukee, he is a national authority on wildlife art. You know, I kidded him a little bit as I hadn't met him, or at least thought I hadn't met him. And I expected somebody about 15 or 20 years older than he is. Pretty young guy to have accomplished as much as he's accomplished. And this book is a real achievement. Believe me when I tell you that. Well, I tell you what, we can't all be great artists, but most of us like taking photos and pictures. And we mentioned Tom Mangelson as one of the great wildlife artists. Well, we have a guy, Jack Socha of Spring Grove, Minnesota, who's taught photography for a long time, and maybe he can help you and help me become better with our digital cameras. That's what we'll be talking about next year on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.